Today on Family Talk.
I do a lot of preaching at churches. At the end of the service, I was told by a principal of a school, a small school district, that 15 children in that school district had to be separately accommodated because they came out as transgender, and not a single one could they tell the parents. The average transgender will not live to see their 30th birthday, even if they're in a transgender-friendly community. Studies show they are still just as likely to commit suicide. It's a path of destruction, and now our public schools are bound to further that destruction.
Disturbing insight into what children and parents are facing today. Welcome to Family Talk with your host, psychologist and best-selling author, Dr. James Dobson. I'm Roger Marsh. On the program today, Dr. Dobson will talk with the aforementioned Brad Dacus of the Pacific Justice Institute and how his law firm is constantly fighting for religious freedom and freedom of speech in and out of the courtroom. Let's take a listen to part one of the interview entitled Defending Our Faith, Cases Affecting the Family. Here's Dr. Dobson to begin the program.
With me on the program today is a very dear friend that Shirley and I have had the pleasure of knowing for almost 25 years. His name is Brad Dacus. He's president of the Pacific Justice Institute. They're doing great work. We're going to talk about that today. Brad Dacus is a Juris Doctor from the University of Texas School of Law. He founded the Pacific Justice Institute in 1997. And for his efforts at PJI, Brad was presented with an honorary doctorate of religious freedom and family rights from California Baptist University. He's had many accolades, and I want to tell you, I appreciate your having the courage to stand up and defend the people of that state and defend religious liberty. And I am really excited to talk with him about some of the cases that he and his fellow lawyers are involved with and their constant struggle, their battle to defend religious freedom and free speech across the nation. We've been in that struggle as well, as you all know, and I've been at it for 40 years. And there are those that would really like to shut down even what the Constitution has to say about religious liberty. We're doing everything we can, and I know Brad and his team are also doing what they can to defend religious liberty, and we're going to be talking about some of that today. Brad, are you encouraged or are you discouraged as you have been, you know, in this struggle for, it is 20 years since Pacific Justice Institute began, isn't it?
Oh, it is. And it's very encouraging when I see how God has worked through our ministry, and there's other ministries out there he's worked through as well. But in California, you know, Dr. Dobson, we're on like what I call the beaches of Normandy.
That's very well said.
Yeah,
because it is a battle.
Yeah,
royal.
It's very intensive, and it has a big impact on the rest of the country. What comes out of this major battlefront that we have on the West Coast, and so in one sense, I'm very encouraged to see how gracious God has been with regard to our ministry. We have five offices in California, five full-time attorneys, and we handle more case matters on the West Coast, defending faith, family, and freedom by God's grace than any other organization of our kind. And that's been really encouraging. On the other hand, we also see horrific attacks on faith and family that I never thought I would see in my lifetime from cases and new laws coming out that are a major challenge. And yet, it's also encouraging in that we also have another element to it, which is the Supreme Court moving in the right direction, which gives us an incredible opportunity for
the U.S. Supreme Court.
Yeah, that's right, the U.S. Supreme Court.
You've got a California Supreme Court that's not quite so accommodating, right?
Yes, I've told people if God can speak through a donkey, he can speak through the California Supreme Court or the Ninth Circuit. So we've seen grace and times when I thought for sure we weren't going to win, and we did. But the exciting thing, though, is we have an incredible opportunity because on one hand, we have horrific laws to faith, family, and freedom and cases coming from the West Coast in particular. And on the other hand, we have a Supreme Court that will soon be, I believe in a year from now, with some replacements of one or two more justices, will be the most faith-friendly, from a constitutional perspective, most faith-friendly, family-friendly Supreme Court we will have had in my lifetime or the lifetime, perhaps in your lifetime as well.
Let me say something about that may surprise some of our listeners and it may irritate some of them. President Trump is determined to keep his promise to change that court and that the people that he places on the court would be pro-family and would have the same kind of values that you and I, Brad, represent. And if the people of this country who believe what we believe in righteousness and freedom, religious liberty, what the Constitution says, being pro-life and pro-marriage, all those things, those that believe that had better support this man because they're out to get him.
Yes.
I mean, speaking of the president, they're out to drive him out of office. And if that occurs, what you just described as a changed Supreme Court for the future, maybe for the next decade or two or three.
4 decades,
yeah.
Potentially. Yeah.
We had better stand up and be counted.
Yes. Absolutely. The stakes were so high this last November. And I was sort of acting in faith and hoping that Trump was going to do what he said he was going to do. And it was so relieving to see that he is doing what he said he was going to do when it comes to court nominees.
And a lot of other things in terms of religious liberty.
Right. You know, it's interesting. Just a few decades ago, I remember when I was younger, there was the moral majority. And the issue was, is America going to be moral? Are we going to maintain the moral constants in our society? And now the question is, will we have the freedom to simply be Christian and live our Christian life without being persecuted? That is unfathomable when we think about where we were and the issues back then versus where we are today. But the good news is that, once again, the Supreme Court, I believe, is going to be decisively moving in the right direction. And with some of these cases that we've been taking on in particular, I think we're going to see some great case law. And at the end of the day, of course, what really makes a nation, you know, have a revival and turn around is Christians exercising their rights to be Christians, to live their faith, to exhibit the love of Christ to the people.
And you're trying to defend people who are having trouble doing that.
Yeah. Ministries, churches, schools, and individuals in the workplace, and likewise to be able to do that. You know, we came out with a book, Reclaim Your School, and it talks all about how to legally evangelize public schools. Mm-hmm. So people can take this and run with it anywhere in the United States. We did a training video, Faith in the Workplace, for business owners. It talks all about how they can legally evangelize their employees, their customers, their community, and partner with ministries and churches. We have so much freedom there. I think one of our focuses has to be on not just defending it, but also empowering the body of Christ to thrive with their faith in every quadrant of their life.
And yet you were in my office a few minutes ago talking about the opposite of what's taking place in many public schools.
Oh.
You were talking about second and third graders having people coming in from the outside and talk about gender neutrality, and you can choose to be a boy or a girl. I mean, we're talking second graders. We're talking 6 and 7 and 8 year olds being propagandized in this way and changing their attitudes. And now we're seeing in this population of teenagers, many of them just have bought that whole gender neutrality line.
Right.
And many of them are saying, I really don't know whether I'm male or female. And it's a lot of them. It's like 50% in some Christian schools.
Oh, yeah. I would say the majority of high school kids in Christian schools do not have a biblical worldview when it comes to transgenderism or same-sex sexual lifestyles. And that's a strong thing to say, but it's supported by the research and the stats out there. But when you look at what they're being exposed to, whether it's on television, Hollywood, music bands, on the internet, And then, of course, in public schools, it's very widespread in public schools from an educational perspective.
What does the law in California say with regard to a third grader who says, "Ms. Jones, I'm no longer a boy, I'm a girl"? And how does she react to that child, and what does the law tell her she must do?
The law in California is very clear. It says that if a child says that they feel that they're the opposite gender, then the school must treat that child as the opposite gender, must allow that child, let's say a boy, to go into the girls' restroom. They must refer to him as a her and play along with this dysphoria. It's a dysphoria, of course. It's a mental condition. And what really breaks my heart is that the law binds the school and the teacher from ever letting the parents know about it.
It cuts the parents out.
Cuts the parents out completely.
It's a critically important issue.
Right. And that's why we at the Pacific Justice Institute are litigating, as I speak, to get this on the ballot in 2018. We had a massive petition drive, and we're defending those petitions, and we're litigating that. And it's very concerning on that level. But then also you have it on the privacy level, Dr. Dobson, where in junior high and high school, a boy who says, "I feel like I'm a female," and he may be sincere and he needs love and compassion and protection, okay? But the law says that that boy has the ability to go right into the girls' locker room and change and be naked and shower at the same time with the girls that are changing and naked and showering. And I, when this first came out, Dr. Dobson, I thought this was going to be like more of a, you know, we have a few here, a few there. It is happening exponentially, exponentially. I do a lot of preaching at churches. At the end of the service, I was told by a principal of a school, a small school district, that 15 children in that school district had to be separately accommodated because they came out as transgender, and not a single one could they tell the parents. And that is mind-boggling when you think of what happens to those children when they grow up. The average transgender will not live to see their 30th birthday, even if they're in a transgender-friendly community. Studies show they are still just as likely to commit suicide. It's a path of destruction, and now our public schools are bound to further that destruction.
All right, Brad, if we're talking about an 8-year-old child, I mean, this is a very small child whose parents send him to school, and he gets there and he has heard all this stuff about transgender, and he tells the teacher he is a girl instead of a boy. What is the school required to do?
The school is required to put together a package of accommodation so that they call it accommodation. And they're going to be required to treat that boy like a girl.
If he says his name is Jane, you have to call him Jane.
You have to call him Jane. You have to use female pronouns. It's mandated. In fact, a directive came from the Department of Justice just recently saying that under Title IX, that school districts, they must actually use the female pronoun. If a male comes out and says they're transgender, they have to do this. And this is something we're hoping that Sessions will be correcting from the Department of Justice. But in California, it's a statutory law. In fact, we just received word that there's a school district in California being sued because they didn't go far enough in playing along with this dysphoria, encouraging this dysphoria with a child who had come out and decided to change their gender and how their gender's treated. You know, none of these kids have had surgery. You know, you can't have surgery until you're 18. So this is all about treating them in with who they say they are. And I know one study showed that children in elementary school, here's a sad thing, Dr. Dobson, that children in elementary school, that of those who have just gender identity dysphoria, over 70% will on their own work through it and resolve it and not have the dysphoria by the time they reach adulthood. That's if they don't have influences encouraging the dysphoria. We're having, this law mandates that public schools will encourage a dysphoria that might otherwise would have likely gone away had they been just simply left alone, much less had solid Christian counseling.
Can a school teacher line up the boys in one line and the girls in the other line? Can they talk to children as boys and girls?
Oh, yes, they can, but they have to be sensitive to how that boy or that girl feels about themselves. So if a girl says, I'm really a boy, then they have to treat them like the boy and have to let that girl be in the line with the boys. They have to let the girl use the boys' restroom and treat them just like they were a boy, even though there is absolutely nothing boy about the child.
How quickly this has come upon us.
Right. And once again, parents cannot be notified about this. They have to be kept in the dark. And that's how dangerous our public schools have become in California, much less our textbooks are required by law to have gay and transgender role model icons in the history books and sociology books all throughout our public schools, all throughout the state of California. Some schools, school districts like the one in Santa Ana, they have rainbow flags in the classrooms, lots of propaganda. It's being pushed and pushed. And the sad thing, once again, is we're talking about children who will pay the price for this. And the love of Christ, I go back to this, is real important. It's not the politics or whatever. It's the love of Christ must compel us not to be silent and to let this kind of horrific thing, sacrificing, take place when it comes to children.
I suppose that a mother and father are very concerned about their son or daughter who seems to have this perspective, this dysphoria you're talking about. Is it legal for them to seek counseling help from a psychologist or counselor on their own?
I'm glad you asked that question because this last year, things have changed in California. In the past, parents can take their kid to a Christian counselor, et cetera. Well, first, it's illegal in California for anyone under the age of 18 who is struggling with same-sex attraction or gender identity issues to be able to get counseling from a licensed counselor, even if that licensed counselor is a pastor or a minister. We at Pacific Justice Institute, we got an 18-month injunction against the state of California on this, and it was finally reversed by the Ninth Circuit, and we're hopeful the Supreme Court will entertain taking it up in the future. But in addition to that, CPS, which are social workers, they have begun a policy to take children from families that do not affirm the dysphoria or the sexual orientation lifestyles of their children. I've had a case of a pastor and his wife call me on this, and they came very close to losing their child. They called us before the social worker came, the day before. And I asked him, I said, what are you going to tell the social worker? They said, we're going to tell them, explain we're a Christian family. We believe what the Bible says, and we have a biblical worldview, et cetera, et cetera. I said, no, you're going to lose your child. Here's what you're going to say. And I told them, I said, you're going to thank them for being tolerant and sensitive to the needs of your child and all this stuff. And the pastor says, well, that's not true. And I said, I know it's not true. They said, but you're going to lose your child. And what we have to do as Christians is be wise. Moses' mother did not tell Pharaoh's army when they knocked at her door, you caught me. Yeah, the baby's in a basket. You'll find it 3 reeds to the right. No. Why? Because a greater harm would happen. Corrie Ten Boom in The Hiding Place, you know, in her story, she didn't tell the Nazis when they knocked on the door, go on upstairs. I can't lie. They're upstairs. No, she prevented a greater harm and evil. And unfortunately, this is what we're having to advise parents, Christian parents, to do when social workers knock on their doors.
There's something within me that it says, I know that what you're saying is right, but it doesn't seem right. It seems to be evil to say to parents, you cannot stand up for what you believe in teaching your boys and your girls. And if they need help psychologically and in counseling help, that you can't go get it for them.
This is the state of California. You know, there's other states like Oklahoma that have fantastic parental protections. And other states across the country, but states like California are starting this. Other states, blue states predominantly, are starting to copy.
This is one of the things that Pacific Justice Institute is working on.
Oh, absolutely. We're dealing with this multi-angled attack on parents and their children And we're doing it creatively sometimes in terms of the counseling we give, but also we're fighting it in the courts very aggressively with our team of attorneys.
Let's talk about another area of the law that you're dealing with in trying to defend religious liberty. It has to do with abortion and notification in the clinic about the places where people who are pro-life, people who have a decidedly different view, are told where they can go to get this service. Now, I didn't say that very well. You explain the case.
California has a law, and it applies to every pro-life center in the state of California. These are private ministries receiving no money from the government. And yet this law says that they have to have a large sign in their waiting room telling women where they can get a free or low-cost abortion and the phone number to call. This isn't Planned Parenthood. This is inside a pro-life ministry. They're having to advertise something that goes totally against who they are.
That come out of a court case?
No, this is the law. This is what the legislators. We have such an extremely intolerant legislature when it comes to religious freedom and parental rights and these kinds of, and the pro-life movement and things like this and the unborn. So this is the law, and we at Pacific Justice Institute have been litigating this, and we're hopeful that the Supreme Court is going to take it up. The stakes are very high, not just from a pro-life protection perspective, but actually keeping government at bay from being able to say, ministries, you have free speech to say what you want to say, so long as you also say this, which goes totally against who you are and your ministry. Then
they're
that's not
actually mandated
yes.
to say the opposite of what they believe.
Exactly. It's outrageous from a civil rights perspective, and it's something that could have major effects down the road when it comes to government mandating that different entities and groups have to say something. Another example where we're seeing this play out with another law in California requires Christian colleges and universities to have to have a sign on their webpage and in their materials stating that they discriminate in hiring professors that are a same-sex marriage couple. They have to put that right up front as like a warning sign. And the reason I think this is so significant, I look at this as a sophisticated yellow star of David, if you will. Because the
attempt— Like the Nazis required Jews to wear.
Yeah, and they had to put this on their businesses. And it was an attempt to isolate and vilify to further silence their messaging. And that's exactly what they're attempting to do with Christian college universities in California. It's very serious from a civil rights perspective, but also from a religious freedom perspective.
Where are you in your efforts to change that?
Well, the main thing that we're dealing with right now is dealing with the pregnancy clinics, because I think that the issue is very sharp. It's very clear there. And right now, we're waiting to see if the Supreme Court is going to take it up. We hope that they do. There's conflicting case law, so they should take it up. And in the event that they do, then I think we'd have a very good shot at prevailing.
Brad, have you ever found yourself suggesting that parents leave the state of California to protect their own liberties?
If parents cannot have their children either homeschooled or in a private Christian school or in a faith-friendly charter school, because there's different kinds.
Yes.
Then I would strongly encourage parents to seriously consider that option, just because of the reality of what's coming down in all our public schools. It's not just those in San Francisco. It's not just those in L.A. Or Long Beach. It's hitting school districts that you would not expect to be having these issues, but they're required by law, so it's very serious.
We're almost out of time. I want to pick up this issue next time when we meet again tomorrow, okay?
Thank you. I'm looking forward to it.
Okay.
You have been listening to part one of Dr. James Dobson's interview with Brad Dacus of the Pacific Justice Institute and their continuous battle for free speech and religious freedom on the West Coast. If you would like to find out more about the Pacific Justice Institute, you can go to our website at drjamesdobson.org, and there you will find a link to their website. Once again, that's drjamesdobson.org. If you would like to be part of the conversation regarding today's broadcast, you can go to our Family Talk Facebook page and chime in there. Just go to facebook.com/Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. While you're there, be sure to check out previous broadcasts, inspiring videos, and other inspirational quotes. All of this can be found at facebook.com/Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. Make sure to join us tomorrow for part two of Dr. Dobson's interview with Brad Dacus as they continue to discuss cases and laws that are affecting the whole country. I'm Roger Marsh, wishing you a great rest of your day and thanking you for listening to another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not associated with Focus on the Family.